My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whiskey.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whiskey landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
There are aspects of McWilliams' history that have been hugely important.
I think Australia's reputation for high quality wines has certainly had a large part played by McWilliams.
6 months after McWilliams' wines went into voluntary administration, the company's sale to Persistent Asset Management was confirmed in July 2020. Well, actually, it turned out that sale of McWilliams wines wasn't a done deal after all. So there are some loose ends to tie up from that documentary episode in season 6 on the rise and fall of McWilliams. Later this episode, you'll meet the winery's new owners, and they're definitely not from a private equity firm. First up, though, I asked Scott McWilliam, sixth-generation family member and McWilliams global brand ambassador, what had happened since that acquisition fell through.
No, it didn't eventuate, so the sale process continued with the administrators at the time who were in full control of that process. It did extend it out further than what we had anticipated and hoped. But at the end of the day, we've got resolution now. We have McWilliams Wines being under a new ownership, which is Calabria Family Wine Group, a local group to the Riverina who have grown their business alongside other Riverina producers with a high regard for what McWilliams has brought to the region. They've always been very supportive of my family, and the Calabria family have just been growing to new heights, and having McWilliams join their portfolio has been a great pleasure for my immediate family to see.
So that was a desirable outcome to sort of be selling to another family-owned business in the region?
Yeah, for my immediate family it was, but if you recall, with many generations of McWilliams Wines, there was multiple families involved as stakeholders, shareholders, and there was, in fact, a second bidder for the sale, and, in fact, part of the family had preference for that party. So really interesting that the family remained fairly divided right to the end, which was, I guess, indicative of, you know, I guess one of the reasons why McWilliams had to sell was there was division within the family, and we couldn't agree to disagree, perhaps.
What's the mood in the family like now? What's it been like since the sale? Has it been a good thing just to have some resolution and put an end to that uncertainty that there had been for so long?
Yeah, absolutely, James. The family was very sad that after 144 years, we had to sell the business. And there was many of us still fully engaged in the business, like myself. And it was all I really knew, and a lot of the other family members as well. So it was bittersweet in many respects. The fact that we had a problem and that was the solution, we enacted a sale through the administrators, which was all voluntary, by the way. The business never went into liquidation or receivership. It was a voluntary administration. So it was the family letting go, and we'd obviously kept cash flow and solvency monitoring for a number of years, and it just became tiring. And, well, I guess you can't flog a dead horse for too long. And it kind of felt a little bit that way for some of the family members. And so, yes, it's a little bit sad in many respects. It's also we're relieved. Relieved that we're able to move forward, move on. And personally, I'm most relieved because the brand has now a new owner who's respecting the history, who's breathing new oxygen into the brand. And as the McWilliams Global Brand Ambassador still attached to the brand, I've always said to the owners that if the brand wants me, I'm there for the brand. And so there's still family connection there. And there will be some potential for ongoing animosity between the McWilliam families because things didn't go the way that we'd hoped and expected. And but when you've got six generations on, you've got a large family tree. It became too impossible to prune the tree. And this is, I guess, just a classic case of, you know, when a family business gets too big and too hard to manage internally within just the family, it then has to go somewhere else.
Talk to me about the relationship between the Calabria and McWilliam families over the years prior to this.
Having grown up in Griffith, the Griffith community is very small and most people know each other. And Bill Calabria, the patriarch of Calabria Family Wines, has always been very close to my family. And my grandfather, who's still alive, living in a nursing home in Griffith, on occasion would get a random visit, apparently, from Billy Calabria popping in to say good day. And Andrew and his brothers and sister, they're flying the flag as Billy's stepping back. And they're really respectful of what my family has been able to achieve. And they're very respectful that there's multi-generations that we were pioneers of the Riverina. And the Riverina is the fruit bowl of New South Wales, which has nourished a lot of other families in the wine industry specifically. And the Calabria family has been one of those. And so we're very, very proud that the Calabria family has rescued McWilliams in some respect and breathing new life into it. And it's quite exciting to see what they're doing with the new packaging. There's new product development. Fortifieds are being revived, which is amazing. I've never seen the package look so good on them. We've got Russell Cody, who's been a long-time winemaker for McWilliams Wines, was there well before I started as a winemaker. And we've now got Mel McWilliam, who's employed as an assistant or junior winemaker with Russell. So she's standing behind the brand making the wines as well. So there's still a lot of connection there.
And so earlier this year, we saw McWilliams also named among the world's most admired wine brands. How did that feel? That's a pretty amazing result.
Yeah, absolutely. To be nominated by, I guess, industry peers to be within the top 50 of the world's most admired brands was, well, for a start, it was unexpected. And we always felt that we've had global recognition, and I've done a lot of work, a lot of years of my own personal travel and getting the name out there. We've had partnerships for decades and decades internationally. So the brand has been globally recognised. And there is, I guess, part of the reason that Calabria had an interest in McWilliams was due to that equity that the brand does obviously have and still has. It's quite inspiring to see that the McWilliam brand, McWilliams Wines brand that my family spent six generations building, has had such a huge impact on the global marketplace that people still today recognise the brand.
Calabria Family Wines was established in the Riverina in 1945 by Italian immigrants Francesco and Elizabeth Calabria. By 1966, the next generation had taken the reins. Bill Calabria AM is still on the winemaking team today, and he joins us this interview along with his sons, Andrew, the company's sales and marketing manager, and Michael, general manager. I asked Michael first up how the family became interested in acquiring McWilliams Wines.
So I suppose when McWilliams went into administration back in 2020, we looked at it as a family and we liked the idea of maybe merging or adding McWilliams to our portfolio. The problem with it at the time when we looked at the purchase, it was for everything, including Mount Pleasant. So then obviously that was on the table for a while. Once the other potential buyer pulled out, the option came available to split the business, so the Hunter and the Riverina portfolios of McWilliams. And then that's when we really started looking hard again, and 12 months later we ended up with the McWilliams brand. So that's how it come back on the table for us.
Why wouldn't have it appealed Mount Pleasant? I mean, just sort of geography or the level of financial investment required or a combination of all of the above?
Yeah, probably a bit of all the above. I mean,
that's Andrew Calabria speaking now.
Hunter's a great region. Calabria, we have a second home in the Barossa Valley with our vineyards and cellar door down there. And we try to sort of manage everything that we can as a family-operated business and not to rule out any future developments into other premium regions. But just in terms of the timing, remembering this is in the midst of COVID as well. So also just trying to consolidate as a business. So it just felt a little bit more easier to manage knowing that McWilliams Hanwood in itself is quite a big operation.
Also, financially, you know, it was just a bit too much for us to take everything on as well. There was also vineyards for sale as well. And, you know, we didn't want to stretch ourselves to the point where we're going to make it more difficult than what it already was. And one of the reasons that the administrators favoured us was because we were taking most of the staff on as well, keeping the staff on and keeping the operation going.
Bill, maybe you could talk about the history and the association of the McWilliam and the Calabria families in the Riverina.
Well, we've got to go back and remember that McWilliams are the ones who planted the first grapes here in 1913. And hadn't it been for them, I don't think all these other wines, including ourselves, would have been in this area. So it was very attractive, and to me, it felt like we didn't want that history to disappear. We didn't know what was going to happen with McWilliam. And our idea was if we did purchase McWilliam, we'd keep the name going and try and build the brand back and keep that history going because it's so important to the region.
And I believe that you even take your name from it. There's some connection there with your name and the McWilliam name. How did that come about?
Well, that came about that I was the youngest of nine children.
Right.
And my father called everyone whatever their name were. I don't know if he ran out of Italian names or not, but because he worked at McWilliams in the vineyard, he decided to call me William after McWilliam. And because his nickname was Penfold, everyone used to call my father Mr. Penfold because Penfolds were here. So because he was making a bit of wine, they called him Penfold. So he probably thought it was good to call me William for McWilliams. So I guess that's how it came about.
And what were the key assets that you saw that really attracted you to buying McWilliams? Was it about production facilities or brands or complementary product offering or a combination of all those?
It'd be a combination of all those, I'd say, James. I mean, there was obviously looking into the business, there's a few aspects which were really attractive. The first would probably be McWilliams built what is known as the premium cellar at Hanwood. It's a 1,000-ton capacity based on small batch winemaking. This helps with the sourcing from Tumbarumba and Hilltops. So that in itself was a great winemaking facility. They'd also not too long ago completed the distribution centre or their new warehouse and logistics centre in Hanwood. That was also attractive. But then also the brands in themselves, I think we see the bones of the McWilliams portfolio was still intact. The market had sort of shifted in different directions away from fortified, but we actually sort of seen that as a way to be, you know, a category leader with the fortified market and build on the McWilliams name.
It's obviously not news to anyone that fortifieds have been in decline for a little while, but, you know, you guys have made some investment in the McWilliams fortifieds, you know, with some new packaging and that type of thing. What's the opportunity that you see for these wines in the current market climate?
Well, I think it's taken a leaf out of what we're sort of seeing happen with craft spirits. It's very hard just to replicate a 30-year-old or a 20-year-old barrel of fortified. You can't just turn that on. That comes with time. And for us, it was about resetting the Hanwood range. There was already a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old, and now with the launch of the 20 and 30-year-old, we don't see this as going to be, you know, the volume play isn't where we're at. It's probably really being able to talk on the premium aspect of Australian fortified wines, which, you know, we have some of the best aged fortified material in the world and building on that.
These fortifieds, people are sort of getting introduced to some of the flavours through whiskey at the moment, aren't they? Even though they might not have tried a tawny, but they've probably tried a tawny finished whiskey.
Well, we're seeing more of that and probably bringing recruitment into it as well. I mean, fortified was always considered the older consumer. But I think with the whiskies and what we're sort of seeing, there's a bit of recruitment going on with the younger generation. So, again, endless opportunity. We're even in the midst of trying to relaunch some Aperas, a 5-year-old and a 20-year-old Apera, which, I mean, in terms of cocktail mixes or an aperitif, these wines do have a place with the everyday consumer that we're seeing now.
What about from, you know, a table wine perspective, how do you see the McWilliams portfolio sort of complementing what Calabria has?
It sort of puts a new region on our portfolio, as in Calabria's more been Riverina focused and Barossa Valley, whereas McWilliams gives us option into Hilltops, Tumbarumba, more cool climate, Pinot Noirs and Chardonnays. So I think it's a real good complement on our portfolio of a range of heavy reds from the Barossa, nice commercial wines from the Riverina, and cool climate regions, you know, with Pinot and Chardonnay. It does really well. And, you know, we've seen it. It wins a lot of medals. McWilliams done a great thing of investing in the winery, in the premium winery. And that gives you the access to do things that we weren't able to do for a long time. Small batch winemaking is, you know, Riverina is known as a commercial player, but having the facilities of a 1,000-ton premium winery gives you attention to detail.
And that's where all of those McWilliams wines are vinified at Hanwood, are they?
It's actually a remarkable facility. You're sort of making the comparison to what Brown Brothers probably did in the late 80s with the Kindergarten Winery, and I believe Australian Vintage have done sort of something similar in Angoves as well with the, it's almost a micro winery within the winery, but, you know, we run it very isolated with its own sort of winemaking team overlooking that. I mean, it's an A-grade facility and allows us to orchestrate fruit from those different regions. And again, it doesn't disrupt what's happening on the commercial side as well. So it actually complements each other quite nicely.
Calabria has been at the forefront of some of the interesting stuff happening in this country with different varieties. Is that facility going to kind of help you with what you're doing there as well?
Yeah, well, look, nothing really changes. I think Dad and he can jump in, but alternate varietals and having a strong point of difference for a business like Calabria has always been important, because we aren't, well, you know, we aren't Wolf Blass or Penfolds. We're not a big name. We've been working really hard over the last 20 years, and innovation's been a big part of that. Pinot Grigio is a great example. It was planted in the mid-90s and it now represents a large portion of our white wine crush. But that was innovation at the start. And I think if we stuck to just Chardonnay and Shiraz, it would obviously become quite a complacent or not a very exciting business to be in. So alternate varietals is a very important thing for us going forward. Something that McWilliams had invested in as well, but more so on our side with a lot of the Italian varietals that we're sort of seeing in market now. We trial a lot too. There are a lot of things that don't, you know, we get planted and don't become commercially available because they don't work, but it's that trial and error as a business, which Dad has sort of drove from the 90s and right through to our team now. Trial and error is fine because I think it's a part of our learning and our growth.
What are the alternative varieties that you're most excited about in the business at the moment?
Have to be Montepulciano.
Yeah.
Is something that's doing really well. Hard to pronounce, but, you know, we abbreviate. It's Monty, and it's just doing really well. You know, everything's a hand sell, but people come into the cellar door.
Pinot Grigio is still very strong. We've got a Drift that we make from the Riverina, which has become very popular with the new generation who've never heard of Drift. So a point of difference seems to be always attractive because you're not sticking to the same, like Andrew said, you run of the mill. And we're fortunate that we're selling quite a bit to the UK. And the UK were miles ahead of what Australia was doing because they were dealing with the French and the Italians. So that encouraged us to plant some of these varieties because we knew we had a market for it. And it took Australia a little bit longer, the domestic market, to comprehend that, you know, the size we were, it made it very difficult for us to do small parcels. But now that we've got the McWilliams site, we can focus on that a hell of a lot more because we've got the proper equipment and it makes it easy for the winemakers and ourselves.
Tell me about how the expansion into the Barossa has gone over recent years. I remember when you launched the first vintage of the Iconic, and it just seems like the Barossa's become, you know, an even more important part of what Calabria is doing.
Yeah, it has become very important. And when we first went down to the Barossa and had a look at it, reminded me when I was only 20 years of age and I went down and I seen Wolf Blass and he just won the Jimmy Watson Trophy. And that's when I thought, gee, I'd love to have a vineyard here one day. It took 55 years later for it to come true. But we drove past and we seen this vineyard for sale which had grapes we were planted in 1914. And they were really run down. And that's when I decided that we were going to purchase that property. The rest is history. And it's gave us a good hold in the Barossa. And the Barossa people seen that we were serious about what we were doing. And they took us on board as a local. And we've found that it has helped the sales of our product. And it's helped us venture out and make a different style of wine than what we're making in the Riverina.
There's a cellar door, a Calabria cellar door now there and everything. How long has that been the case for?
So that's been going for, I think we're moving on to 4 years now with the cellar door and the Harvest Kitchen restaurant, which is also within the facility. It's a great lunchtime venue overlooking the Elizabeth Vineyard. So we have three different vineyard estates in the Barossa now, and the cellar door is located on the Elizabeth Vineyard. And again, we're not just planting Shiraz. Dad dragged Michael, myself and my older brother down there, I don't know, about 5 or 6 years ago, and we planted a block of Montepulciano and Darif. Some Malbec went in as well. So we're having a bit of fun with what we're doing down there as well. And so we've got, you know, there's 100 acres split up across three different vineyards. And again, it's not just about Shiraz. We know that that's the mainstay for Barossa, but it's also doing what we do and trying to be a little bit different and use our innovation and bring some old things to life and just trying some new things in general.
Now, you guys must be very busy there because on top of everything else we've already talked about, you're bringing some new brands into the country as well. So, yeah, maybe tell us about those.
Yeah, so
busy or crazy, yeah. Which one is it?
So this kind of all come about before McWilliams and the chatter of well, how do we sort of expand the portfolio. We have a sales team across all states and territories, and it was about probably just offering diversity, especially in a market that I think has we've become quite educated in terms of different varietals and different regions from around the world. So we are exporters of wine. We've developed friendships and relationships with other wineries overseas. And for us, it was just a natural gravitation to try and work with some of these families that we've become friends with and represent them in Australia. So currently we represent over six different brands. And that part's exciting, but it's just given us diversity. And I think, you know, with that layer of McWilliams in there is also quite exciting. But working with brands like Champagne Dirts and Canty Prosecco and Symington Family with their Dows brand, Fontana Fleda out of Barolo, I mean, who wouldn't want to sort of work with such great brands producing great wines? I think it's exciting for us as a family. That's foremost, but just for our whole team in general. It's sort of given us a new lease of life and being able to really go out with quite a strong portfolio.
It's been a really challenging few years for the Australian wine industry, to say the least, like with everything that's happened, obviously COVID, bushfires, difficult vintages generally, and the China situation. You guys must be very confident in the prospects for your business and the industry to be expanding the way that you are.
Yeah, well, I suppose as a family, you look at the long-term investment. You don't look at the hurdles in front of you. You look at the future and where do we want to see the business be in 10, 15 years. We're not here to show dividends. Obviously, we want to survive and be relevant, but decisions we make aren't for the next 12 months. They're for the next probably 10 to 12 years longer. So, you know, we're going to have the ups and downs. It's a big cycle. We've seen it in the past. Bill's got a lot of history in the game and, you know, having Bill around is really important. Is really important to know that there is ups and there is, you know, when it's good, it's good. And when it's bad, it's tough. And that's from our growers and our suppliers. Everyone sees the tough times, but it's how we see the future and the good times and being in this game and having a passion for it too. It's driven by passion more than finance, I think.
You've got to love this game, otherwise you wouldn't stay in it.
You don't go into it for purely financial motivations, do you?
That's a bonus if you make something out of it. But, you know, with me growing up, I guess we've always had challenges. My parents always had challenges. They built it into me. I hope I've built it into my children as well, to know that if you set your mind to it, you'll always achieve what you want to achieve. But you're not going to do it by sitting back. You've got to roll your sleeves up and you've got to lead from the front. And we'd like to think that that's what I've done and what my children are doing. And also our staff can see that. And because they see that we do a bit of everything and we're not frightened to do any, they got a lot more confidence in us and they work better for us as well, and which we appreciate because we still want to be a family company. Even though we're employing a lot of people, we still want them to be part of the family because without them, we can't do what we're doing. And it's been working for us. And they give us confidence to do what we're doing as well.
Bill, what would have been some of the most challenging times that the business has been through previously?
I think the 80s was very challenging, where there was an oversupply of grapes, oversupply of wine. The government supported vineyards to pull out their vines, and a lot of wineries hit the wall. I stopped making wine because I was in the same position where we couldn't sell our wine. And I went into washing bottles to try and keep the winery going. And it was difficult, but I tried to sell the winery and there was no buyers. And we kept washing bottles for about 5-6 years. And then come in the 90s, it turned around and there was a demand because there was bugger all grapes around. And all of a sudden, the export market took off, especially in America and the UK. And everyone started planting grapes again. And we had a boomer. And I was selling bulk wine to all the big companies. And that's what helped me get back on my feet. So that was probably one of the most challenging times. Like I tried to sell the wine 2-3 times. As it worked out, destiny's a funny thing. So that's where we are today. Otherwise, we wouldn't have been in the wine game anymore back in the 80s. So I guess that was probably one of the most challenging times. And, you know, I lived in the winery. My two boys were born in the winery here. So they were very tough times. And I believe that that makes you a stronger person. And hopefully, if I pass it on to my children and my staff, they understand that you can overcome those obstacles. And we've had tough times with China coming down. There's a lot of people who depended 100% on their sales with China. So I guess they've gone through tough times and this is a tough time now. But I'm sure we'll get through it. And like I said, at the end of the day, we just got to tighten the belt up and make sure we spend the money very, very wisely.
Is there anything that Calabria can learn or take from what's sort of evolved at McWilliams as a family business? You know, you really have to look at it as a success that they lasted as long as they did. But is there anything that you sort of look at and sort of can take from that?
Of course. I think, and look, history is starting to tell us that it's very hard to go multiple generations in any business, let alone a wine business. There were 6 generations and instrumental in pioneering so many different aspects of the Australian wine industry. In the end of McWilliams sort of side of things, I think, and Dad grew up locally with a lot of the McWilliams family in all different parts of winemaking and sales and running the business. And towards the end, I think there was only 3 McWilliams family members left sort of employed in the business, which again, it's hard to bring a new generation through. So from a collaborative side of things, Michael and myself, my sister and my other older brother are all in the business. And as Dad sort of already mentioned, we're here to be aligned with our staff. We couldn't do what we've done without the support of having great people around us. Will the next generation come through? I mean, obviously that's not a forced decision on any of them at all. And we'd like to think that there's a business here for it, but it's hard. Multi-generations is hard. Different family members coming through. So I think time will sort of tell. Right now we're really heavily embedded. We're a 3rd generation. We've got quite a young team around us. Whatever the future holds, we'll wait and see. But I think it's important to be in the business is really important for us. We cover off all different sort of parts of it, but be that with winemaking, sales and marketing, viticulture, we all try and dig deep and share the workload.
You know, it's very sad to drive into McWilliam and see what they've built and to see that it needs a lot of work to bring it back to where it should be. We go in there, we don't look at it and say it's our wine. We go in, we say it's McWilliams and we want to get that history back. That's more important than anything else at this stage.
And that was Bill Calabria AM. Watch your podcast feed for a follow-up episode exploring McWilliams' relaunched Hamwood Estate range of tawny fortifieds. The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.